When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Macabre misfortune.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 76 of Macabre Misfortunes. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
Tracy, my voice is completely screwed and I'm coughing my head off, but I think we can get through this.
All right, sweetie.
This is a particularly sad story that we've got today. It's about the Rwanda genocide back in 1994.
Okay.
I don't think this story gets enough recognition about what went on.
Mm-hmm.
You hear a lot about, you know, some other situations throughout history, but this one, man, it's gonna just blow people's mind who are unfamiliar with it.
Okay.
And that's my whole point. There are a lot of people who are unfamiliar
with it. I just
don't
know about
it. And you know, it's something everybody should probably know about. So we're gonna do our bit to try to help a little bit. So before we get into the story, let's talk a little bit about what a genocide is. In a nutshell, it's the killing off of a large group of people with the intention of basically eliminating them.
That's awful.
The obviously most well-known situation like this was Adolf Hitler.
Doing
the situation with the Holocaust. With the Jews, with over 6 million Jews killed, but that was a genocide. That was his goal, was to basically eliminate the Jewish population.
Wow. Scum. Now,
a genocide can be for a number of reasons, such as to eliminate a religion, a race, ethnic group, whatever the situation is. It's just basically whatever that group of people is. Let's go to Rwanda. Rwanda's a country in Africa, by the way. This is 1994. There were 100 days of bloodshed and mass murder.
Oh my gosh.
Sadly, neighbor turned against neighbor, family member against family member. And at the end of these 100 days, 1/10 of the Rwandan population would be dead.
Oh my gosh. Cannot even imagine.
All right, so we're going to get into actual numbers a little later in the episode. So let's first discuss why this happened. So we're going to have to go back to around 1919. And this is when the Germany, after World War II, had taken over control of the country. And then Belgium took over control of the country after that. At this time, Rwanda was ruled by a monarchy of Tutsi.
Tutsi?
Tutsi.
Okay.
Now, Tutsi was one of three ethnic groups that made up the nation.
Mm-hmm.
The odd thing here is the Tutsi were, and the even smaller Twa, were the two minority groups. The Hutu actually made up the majority of the country, but they weren't in charge.
Well, that's kind of weird.
Well, there's going to be part of a reason for that.
Okay.
Many of the Hutus and the Tutsi, the civilians-wise anyway, were on pretty good terms. They didn't care who was
in charge.
But this is important. The colonial powers of the Belgian rule, they encouraged political division. They enforced record-keeping around ethnic identity. So to them, it was more important which group you were a part of than whether you were just part of Rwanda. They weren't one country. They were a country made up of three different political divisions or groups, and that's the way they were listed. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This created a public narrative that made Tutsi out to be an elite ruler and Hutu as ordinary farmers. Now, was this the case? No. But that's how they were labeled. And because that's how the Belgian powers that be labeled them, that's the way it continued. So it would be no different that if somebody came in where you're at or whatever, and let's say they came in and said, oh, well, people from Kentucky are less than people from Indiana because we say so.
Right, right.
And then over a period of time, that's just how just you look at yourself.
Yeah, right.
So that's kind of what's happened here.
But then you're kind of like, well, who are you to say that? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, over the years, the propaganda obviously led to intense political hostility. Because like you said, who are you to say that?
Mm-hmm.
Tracy, we don't get political on this show.
That is correct.
But I'm going to say this. Our leaders, and this doesn't matter which country you're in, which country you're listening in right now, our leaders seem to always want to label us in some way, either by race or religion or political party. And that's a very slippery slope that can have very dangerous outcomes. We don't have to be black, white, or Asian, or Hispanic. We don't have to be Republicans or Democrats. We don't have to be Jewish, Catholic, Muslim, or pagan. We can all just be humans.
That's what it should be.
And I think that's the problem with a lot of places.
Right.
All right, in 1959, most of the colonial powers of Belgium had left. So Rwanda's their own country. They're not under anybody's power now.
Well, that's good.
But lingering anger in the Hutu triggered a revolt. When this happened, many of the Tutsis' leaders fled the country. In the next decade, Rwanda became an independent republic with Hutu government. So it was Tutsi government forever.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's Hutu government. This is because, as the majority group of the people in the country, they felt they deserved exclusive access to political power. And a Tutsi minority was pretty much excluded from any government offices because they appointed these offices based on population. And they were a smaller amount of the population, so they didn't get any offices.
I mean, it's just weird because they didn't like it before when the other people were over them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But now they have a choice, so you would think they would make a good choice. You know what I'm saying? Not to be like the other people were over them. Does that make sense?
No, I get that. But at the same time, they're trying to say, you know what? If the majority of the country are us, then we should have all the controlling power. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, but that was their viewpoint.
Yeah, okay.
On top of that, they prohibited the return of any of the Tutsi family members that had left years earlier.
So they weren't allowed to come back.
They're like, you can't come back. All right, Tracy. So again, not to get political, but this is where you also have to be skeptical of everything you hear through the media. In this case, Hutu extremists circulated propaganda on TV, radio, and newspapers blaming Tutsi for the country's economic, social, and political problems.
Okay.
You can imagine how that made the Tutsi feel. So now you're in a country, you're a minority already, and now you've got your government basically blaming you for everything.
Okay.
You're going to be outcast.
Yeah.
I mean, they were in charge of the country for decades and now they're exiled and being treated like crap. Unhappy with this treatment, a small group of Tutsis insurgents invaded Rwanda in 1990. They started a violent civil war. This would go on for 3 years.
In 1990?
Yes. The conflict ended with the Arusha Peace Agreement.
Okay.
So they had a treaty signed. But by this point, the damage had pretty much already been done. There was a lot of insecurities among everyone involved. Nobody trusted anybody. With some people, you know, they remained amicable. You know, some of the Tutsis and the Hutu, they got along. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, we don't care what the government says, you know.
Yeah, well,
we're all friends, family, we've lived together forever. But the treaty intensified political polarization. The following year, 1994, a plane carrying the Hutu Rwandan president was shot down.
Oh, man.
All hell broke loose.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because of this, Hutu officials prepared a deadly response. They were going to do everything possible to ensure that they stayed in power. So they put together a list of political targets, and they gave these names to government-funded Hutu militia groups who hit the streets. These militia groups perpetrated acts of physical and sexual violence against Hutu's political enemies and civilians. Over the next few months, over 1 million Hutu civilians joined the ranks for several reasons. Some were coerced, and some did it out of pride, and others just had personal agendas. Tutsi's victims went to some of the churches and the schools seeking refuge. They were hoping that the international organizations would kind of step in and protect them, but that didn't happen.
Oh.
Not one outside party came to their aid. Even the UN soldiers who oversaw the peace treaty were instructed to abandon Tutsi civilians.
Well, I don't know. They weren't expecting that for sure.
UN leadership refused to even acknowledge that there was a genocide even taking place.
Oh my gosh.
Tracy, all the killing that was taking place was largely done through machetes. It's like nobody had guns. Gosh. It was all strictly hand, you know, knives, machetes, bludgeoning, that type of stuff.
So awful.
The violence finally stopped in mid-July when the Tutsis seized control of the country, which I found odd that when you hear these numbers that I'm getting ready to give you, that they were able to take control. They were already the minority.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had the Hutus going all in against them, and they were still able to take control. By the time everything was said and done, over 800,000 Rwandans had been killed.
Oh my gosh.
Only a small fraction of the Tutsi population was left alive, yet they were still able to overthrow the government. Tracy, we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and then we're going to come back, and I'm going to tell you about how justice was carried out, because, man, this is a story all on its own.
Okay.
Tracy, after all this, the UN finally decided to step in and establish a special tribunal in Tanzania. The goal was to try to prosecute the key perpetrators in this. But Hutu civilians from every level of society had committed atrocities against neighbors, friends, and family members. There were 120,000 Rwandans awaiting trial.
120,000.
And by the way, the prisons in the entire country were designed to hold approximately 18,000.
Well, what'd they do with the... I mean, I know they are definitely overcrowded, but how did they...
They crammed them all in there. In fact, and I might even do it next week, I'm probably going to do another story for one of the specific prisons that was designed to hold about 4,000 people. Because that story about the overcrowding and things that went on there are crazy.
I can't imagine.
So inmates all over the country were dying from poor hygiene and just overcrowded situations. The new Rwandan government estimated that it would take approximately 100 years to prosecute every accused civilian in the national courts.
So they should have just called it a truce. It's like, there's no way not a truce, because what they did was horrible, but there's no way they can get through all that. So, I mean, what are they going to do? I don't think like the prison thing, they didn't think this through. Like, okay, we going to have all these people, kill all these people, but we ain't going to have nowhere to put them.
Well, let's go back in time a little bit, because that's what they decided to do. They said the only way we can do this is to look at a much older practice that they used to do years and years before in Rwanda. They had a practice to resolve interpersonal conflicts called gacaca. That loosely translates to justice on the grass. So gacaca had long been used to address conflicts in villages.
Mm-hmm.
In these cases, local witnesses would speak for or against the accused. They would appoint lay judges, and they would determine the appropriate penalties, within the community's means. They can't say, oh, we're going to do this, and there's no jail there, or whatever. They have to, these small communities, they just had to make do however.
Okay, but are you saying they still had to do them individually?
Yes, but I'm getting to more details. To speed things up, the government chose to use these trials. They had no professional judges or attorneys. There was also no evidence, just a case file and witness testimonies. The charges were divided into four categories. Number one, masterminding the genocide and committing acts of sexual violence. Number two, participating in the killing. Three, physical assault. And four, destroying Tutsi property.
Okay, but how do they determine? They're just pretty much saying everybody's guilty of it?
No, we're getting to it. There's still more.
Sorry.
Those found guilty of the first two categories were going to be entered into the traditional court system.
Okay.
So those would be the ones, instead of putting everybody through the main court system, the ones that they found guilty of starting the genocide and committing the most heinous crimes would be the ones put in the court system. The others were assigned set penalties, which could be reduced if the accused pled guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So they could work it down. But that they basically would be given out penalties based on that. So not necessarily jail time.
Okay.
Could be something else.
Okay.
Thousands of gacaca courts happened every week, started in 2002. It was much faster than a traditional court, but the Rwandan opinion on the trials were kind of mixed. Some didn't want they didn't want to be able to accuse their neighbors in a public setting. Because, that's basically what it was.
Right.
So they kind of had a problem with that. There were other issues where people didn't testify because they were threatened. So it's like, you better not testify against me. Or so they didn't testify. And that's all they had was the testimonies of friends and neighbors to base this off of.
I mean, it's kind of weird that they didn't want to do that for their neighbors or to their neighbors. Yet, they were going at it and killing each other. That makes no sense.
But if it was Rwandan, if they were both Hutu, then they weren't going with it at each other. So you got to look at it like that. And most everybody left were Hutu.
Okay.
Another issue was that the courts only looked at cases with Tutsi victims. You got to remember, this genocide was Hutu against Tutsi. But that doesn't mean every Hutu participated.
Yeah.
But you had some Tutsi that were killing Hutu that had nothing to do with anything just because they were Hutu. But the courts weren't looking at any of those cases. They were only looking at the Tutsi cases. And there was a lot of people, it's like, hey, we had some innocent Hutu people killed, and they're not getting justice whatsoever because they're not even looking at those cases. So, crazy.
Yeah, that's messed up.
In 2012, the trials concluded. 10 years later.
2012, wow.
The courts had convicted, when it's all said and done, 1.7 million individuals.
Wow.
And remember, there was only 120,000 that were arrested at that time, but there was 1.7 million that ended up being
convicted.
Okay,
how did that come about then?
Because in order to get somebody at trial, all they had to have was an accuser. They didn't have to be arrested. If you came and said, hey, Joe Bob next door was a part of this, and I know it, that's all it took to get them to trial.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, so they just took your word.
Yeah, in basically. This case. For the gachachas, yeah, that's how they did it.
Dang. Woo.
So anyway, 800,000 people died. Most of the Tutsi were basically eliminated at that time. And I meant to actually look up numbers and kind of see where things are today, but didn't actually do it.
That's a pretty wild experience to go through, I'm sure.
800,000 people killed in 100 days.
That don't even seem possible. Does it seem possible?
It doesn't, but I mean, could you just imagine what it would be like in the streets of Rwanda?
No.
Back in 1994?
Good grief. That's a very sad, sad story.
But like I said, 800,000 people killed in 100 days, and I just don't know how many people are even aware of this story.
Where do they bury them all?
I have no idea. I'm sure mass graves. All right, guys, that wraps up this version. Sorry my voice was so bad and nasally, and some of my words were not pronounced properly because of my stopped up nose, but I thought it was an important story and I wanted to get it out this week.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys.